From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
A lot of news this week involving the media, and we'll try to deal with as much of it as we can here on The Media Project. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok of WAMC.
Hello.
Alan is a little bit busy.
I don't want to hear one word about that.
Usually he has such a healthy diet that we just have to make note of this. Kit Kats are wonderful.
Here's it's the morning after Halloween, and there's a certain hangover effect.
There is that. Ira Fussfeld, a longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and the affiliated publications thereof. Ira, sir.
Good day.
Good day, good day. And Judy Patrick of the New York Press Association, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
Always here to be with my fellow enemies of the people.
Yes, aren't we that? Boy, I tell you, there's this notion that the media bashing of Donald Trump has become a big part of the midterm election message. The man is not backing off at all, right?
Rex, I'm terribly depressed about this. I mean, you know, I kid around a lot, but this is really depressing. This man, who cares not a whit about what's ethical or moral or good for the American people, takes our most cherished right, our First Amendment right. Look, I've always been one, as you know, Rex, able to be critical of things that the press does at times, or units of the press do. But this is unbelievable. I truly believe that this is the mark of pre-fascism to say, take away people's First Amendment rights, take away the freedom of the press. Because if you take a look at the kinds of people that this man admires around the world, if you take a look at the Duterte's and these other people and the Putins, and you say, okay, this is what he would like to do here. And it is really reprehensible. And he gets away with it because, like Joseph Goebbels, he just says it again and again and again, which is one of the great marks of propagandists. And you know what? There's probably 30% of the people in this country who believe him.
Well, that was the number that he used. And we'll find out if he gets away with it in the next couple of days. But he gave a speech at a rally in Florida last week in which he said, you know, 30% of the people in this country believe that the press are the enemy of the people. And I thought when I heard that, well, that's not so many people. I mean, if he loses his next election 70-30, it will be considered an all-time wipeout. So if he's using 30% of the American people as a reason to continue this assault, he's sadly mistaken as to what the favorable impact is broadly.
Well, he won an election, Ira, the last time. Let's remember this. He lost the popular vote, and by a couple of thousand votes, that's what it was, 70,000 votes in three states, he becomes president of the United States, and he intends to replicate that.
But now he has a record.
But, you know, I would tend to think of myself as an optimist, but I think the press has been pretty powerless in this situation. Mm. Have they made any headway? No. And also, if you remember, 2 years ago, nearly every newspaper in this country did not endorse him as a run for president. And I think for all the fact-checking, for all the articles written, we aren't making any progress.
He is, in fact, winning. He has 91% of the Republicans who say they're strong Trump supporters tell you that they believe the president over the press. Only 11% give the press any headway at all and believe the press.
And Rex, the press didn't start out that well to begin with. It was never that
true.
Popular.
Before Trump came along, there's an interview with the president conducted by the guys who run Axios, and that is just out as we're speaking. And it is interesting because he has explained, when they press him on it, you're the most powerful man in the world, and if you say that word, enemy, 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 think about what enemy means. And the president says, I think I'm doing a service by attacking the press when people write stories about me that are so wrong. I know what I do good and what I do bad. I really get it, okay? I really get it better than anybody in the whole world. So he says, it's my only form of fighting back. I wouldn't be here if I didn't do that. In other words, he thinks that he wouldn't have won if he weren't as effective at attacking the media. And he says, hey, I'm here. It got me here.
That's right. And so the great justification, Rex, is that it got me here. Not is it right, not is it moral, not is it good for the American people, not as if we don't see heinous crimes occurring, like the murder of the Jewish people in Pittsburgh, which his obedient vice president comes out and says has nothing to do whatever with Trump himself, but it does, and he is using these platforms in order to get where he is going. And he thinks as long as he's arrived, as long as he's won, that justifies what he's doing.
Yeah. So anyway, on it goes. The media bashing is a part of the midterm election message. That plus the fear of the immigrant onslaught. The difficulty with that particular issue, the amassing of a group of people 1,000 miles from the U.S. border, is that there has been some breathless coverage of this. The caravan of people coming to the border and the president dispatching troops in what looks to many people like an election year stunt to the border. The concern is that other than Fox News, I mean, of course, Fox News trumpets this because Fox News is, as we've often said, the White House propaganda organ. But the other cable channels have been covering it pretty aggressively as well. Even NPR sent reporters down to, in effect, embed with the people walking along, reporting back that they didn't see any dangerous Arabs. They didn't see anybody other than Central Americans. And of course, reporting accurately that if these people walked 8 hours a day, it would still take them 40 some days to get to the United States border.
So you raise an interesting point, Rex. The question is the press responsive to this? Are they knuckling under as a result of where he is going with all of this? Now, I see some signs of it. For example, you just glowingly, as usual, referred to National Public Radio. I have my problems with them, even though we buy their services. We pay almost, you know, between $800,000 and $1 million a year for that material. We don't belong to them. A lot of people don't understand that. They work for us, not the other way around. But okay, now that I've gotten that out of the way. Now, they have been doing a series of interviews, what we call man-on-the-street interviews. I'm sure you've all heard them.
They call it Politics is Personal is the series,
yeah.
Huh?
And with regularity, they have been showing that these people that they have chosen are voting for Trump.
I disagree. I don't think that's right at all.
I heard the three.
And they don't match your bias. So therefore, it's not good journalism.
Oh,
I think they're doing a very good job of actually reporting both sides. I think NPR is to be commended because most of the audience of NPR is, of course, anti-Trump. And so to give people a voice who are, these are a lot of people who otherwise don't hear Trump supporters.
Well, is it just possible, Rex? Because I'm a little angry at you right now. is it just possible that it's working? That CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, gives the member stations the money, and they give all of that money, the member stations, and a lot more to NPR. And is it just possible that what I consider to be, and that's all I'm hearing, and I listen every day.
It's not all I'm hearing. I think
I want to recommend Murine. It's a thing
who?
You put in.
What?
Murine. It's something you put in your, something you put in your ear to get the wax out of it.
That's for your eyes to see. Is Murine.
No, there's also for you.
You know, that is the danger. I mean, anecdotal reporting, you know, the man on the street, the woman on the street interviews can be enlightening, but they can color the debate in a way that's not all inclusive. I think we always used to do man on the street interviews, but when you go out and look for the people on the street, there are certain kinds of people that have the time to talk to a reporter and certain kinds of people that don't have the time to talk to a reporter, so they can be biased in a way.
I agree with you 100%. I hated those man on the street. You're right, we all do them. They're anecdotal, they're unscientific, and what's worse is that often the headline will create a generalization that these eight people that we've interviewed reflect everybody in the market, and I know why we do it, but I wish we didn't do it.
Well, it's like focus groups. If you don't have somebody who is a real expert at creating focus groups that reflect the range of opinions in the community, then you're just going to get happenstance. So I thought that the NPR reporting, getting real people, has been thoughtfully structured. structured because they have tried to be representative of the whole electorate, reflecting the fact that the nation does seem to be divided roughly down the middle between people who support the president and those who don't. Slightly more seem to be anti-Trump, according to all the polls we see. But I think NPR is to be commended. We'll see. A good friend of mine just becoming the new head of NPR News.
I saw that.
And for the
Who is that? Okay.
Her name is Nancy Barnes. She's the editor of the Houston Chronicle, has been for the past several years. And before that was the editor of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. So somebody coming with a strong journalistic background. Both organizations won Pulitzer Prizes during her leadership. So she's a solid journalist, but she has no background, by the way, in broadcast.
So. Well, she needs all the help she can get, and so does NPR. I think that's great. You know, I mentioned my theory on who they've been picking. And by the way, I want to go on record as saying, because I really do disagree with you about this, that the people who are picking the people on the MOS people are obviously as important as what the MOS people are saying.
Absolutely.
And so therefore, their bias has to be suspected also. Secondly, I don't agree with you at all that it's split down the middle, pro and anti-Trump. The polls are showing that this man has a 40%.
The last I saw was about 45, but that's still close.
It's gone down again.
No, it's gone down.
Well, anyway, but that still is
so
roughly.
So your biases are showing, Rex, and I.
My pro-Trump bias.
Well, that'd it would appear that
news.
Way.
It'd be great news to Times Union readers.
For half a second, go back to the enemy of the people. Keep an eye on this. Fox News, which, of course, is his go-to place, him being Trump. His Fox and Friends show, which is his go-to place within Fox. Two of the commentators on Fox and Friends this week denounced the phrase enemy of the people, Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade. Martha McCallum, who has a show in the evening, also denounced the enemy of the people. And Shep Smith, in the middle of the day, who has never been anything other than objective, or at least down the middle, again, was talking about the caravan and saying, there's nothing to this, don't worry.
Yeah, it was
so
amazing. It's
starting
Smith.
Maybe starting to turn, we'll see.
He said, there is no invasion. No one's coming to get you. There's nothing at all to worry about. We're America. We can handle it. So you hear that on Fox and you think, whoa, the president's inner circle must be having a little bit of twitching here. What's
well, that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, since I believe that Fox is a prostitutional effort, is that maybe Murdoch, maybe the man at the head has a different view of the way all of this should be coming out. And maybe he is turning as opposed to the individuals who have been let off the leash a little bit.
By the way, if you want to share your thoughts with us, media@wamc.org is how you can get your thoughts here. By the way, speaking of Fox, here's a listener. Charles sends us a quick little email that says, has anyone considered that the bulk of President Trump's supporters do not watch CNN? Most get their news from Fox, and Fox reports what CNN is reporting. I don't know about that.
Well, but Rex, also, CNN has taken to reporting what Fox is saying.
Yeah.
So that you see that,
right.
You see that a lot. They make fun of each other on the basis of what each other is saying.
Right. And if they don't watch CNN, how do they know that CNN sucks?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you a recent example. This Don Lemon from CNN made some comment, and I'm wildly paraphrasing, that he basically said the real danger in this country are the white men. This is in the wake of the Pittsburgh thing. And as I was flipping the channels, I saw that was a chyron on the bottom of the screen on Fox. So that was a topic of their discussion.
So here's another listener, Judy in Hennecroy, New York, says, righteous indignation 2 years into this presidency sounds naive at best. Transgressing norms of decency is standard procedure now in the thirst for power. I think that's because it still shocks and thus disarms the opposition. Only Judy Patrick's call for a new ethic for reporting enlightens this week's program. Most of your frames of reference seem tied to journalism school pieties that provoke indignation over and over again, but don't change your reporting to deal with the new dominant realities.
Wow. That's going to take some thinking.
I should admit, though, I'm probably the most naive person here.
Not at all. But I think I love the concept of journalism school pieties. This is the way it should be as opposed to the way that it is. I'm not naming names around our collective table, but it is a term. It is a term I'm going to be remembering.
It is a real issue when you try to talk about media literacy. Even that term, people feel like you're talking down to them.
Hmm. Did you go to journalism school?
No.
But you did. You were the highest achiever in your class at Columbia Journalism School, where you got your master's degree.
Wow. Yeah, so I guess... Do you suppose that I'm the one he's talking about?
No, actually, you are not.
Hey, listen, it was such an amazing week looking back at the week before our this program as we sit here. The news that just went from one tragedy to another. Of course, we had barely gotten over the killing of Khashoggi in Turkey before we got to the tragedy of the killing at the synagogue. I'm getting it out of order, actually. Because before that, we had the bomber that had sent all of the bombs to so many places, to what, 15 targets, including CNN.
Three times.
It was quite an amazing thing. And the difficulty was, of course, how do you cover all of this? How do you not simply lose track of what needs to be a storyline that you follow through?
Do we forget?
Well, yeah. And also what stories that would normally be major stories are being undercovered, if covered at all.
I mean, the bomber who sent all of those things out was almost disregarded as soon as the killings happened. And Rex, I'm really interested in what you have to say about this, because you know about this. It would seem to me that as soon as that happened, we weren't hearing about that bomber anymore. Oh yeah, he showed up to be arraigned, but no intensity.
But it's the nature of news. You go, there was a super typhoon that hit American soil that we don't even hear about.
That's right.
100-mile-an-hour winds.
Much more than 100.
Only 4 recorded storms have struck land with greater force, and that was super typhoon Yutu. And it hit American soil of the Northern Mariana Islands, chain in the Western Pacific.
You said 100 miles. I think it was 180 miles.
180. I'm sorry, you're right. Huge winds. And, of course, we didn't hear anything about that because it happened just as we were covering the bombing. But what can you do? There's only a certain amount of time in a broadcast, right? If you have an hour-long news block in the middle of the day, or we have a certain number of pages in the paper, or a certain amount of space on a digital screen, how do you do that? 9/11 is a great example. Our newspaper had nothing on the front page except 9/11 news for 30 days after 9/11. And so a lot of stuff just gets...
And how much of that lack of coverage was also because it was the Northern Mariana Islands?
Yeah,
and,
I'm sure.
And not on the U.S. mainland, easily overlooked.
I would argue, though, that there are 24 hours of day that the cable stations have to fill, and that's a lot of time. And I also argue the newspapers have a ton of space on their websites and a ton of content actually in the paper itself. And newspapers actually do write those stories. They tend to bury them often, but there is opportunities for us to cover all of the stories. There's 1,000 stories happening every day. Editors have to choose which ones to put on the front page, but that's not the only stories out there.
So what's more important, the Red Sox win the World Series or what happened in Pittsburgh?
Here's the Shartok theory that sports only exist to distract people from important news,
I never said it, and I don't mean
you
that.
Politics
you
of
stop
distraction,
words in my
right?
mouth. You are so wrong. No, but there were two headlines on the wood. The headlines of the New York Post and the Daily News. And one was one and the other was the other.
Right.
So you really say, okay, is the whole business to get people to read or is the whole business to emphasize what's most important?
Well, you're not doing good journalism if you write in a vacuum. I was assigned to explain to our readers downstate about the importance of the New York State Public Service Commission. It's, a great institution that regulates utilities, what you pay for your telephone rates, what you pay for your utilities, how utilities are allowed to build and what they're not is regulated by the Public Service Commission, a little less now than it was in those days. I produced 6,000 words on the Public Service Commission. That was a lot of content.
Oh, yeah.
And I really knew what was going on there, and I was going to share with our readers. And my editors finally ended up, they ran 1,200 of my 6,000. And I'll bet you that most readers probably read about 40 of them. Yeah. So you're not doing good journalism if you write just for yourself to satisfy your own particular interest, or if you only write stuff that isn't interesting. And, we run a full page of comics in the newspaper every day. We run crossword puzzles and Dear Abby. And I think people are interested in a lot of stuff, and we need to pay attention to that.
I do. I'm very interested in what all of those things.
Do you like the comics in particular?
Yeah, I do.
Kit Kat. Is Kit Kat a comic?
Stop it.
No.
I would love to know what the comic analysis is. So, for example, I loved Beetle Bailey. I don't think I see him anymore.
Oh, yeah, we still carry Beetle Bailey.
Has the author, the cartoonist died, but Mort Walker.
Yeah, I like Beetle Bailey, and then I like Gasoline Alley.
Now, Gasoline
Gasoline Alley is really, really old. I mean, now they're doing a whole thing about how old they are.
Does it still exist?
Yeah, it
oh
does.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
is. And so do you guys keep track of who reads what? Do you know that Gasoline Alley is old, 77-year-olds, as opposed to...
That's the youngest readers of Gasoline Alley. We don't actually carry Gasoline Alley anymore.
But do you know who reads what?
Not comics. You can't in print. That's one of the downsides of print. You can't really.
We used
track
to do
that
reader
well.
Surveys that tried to track it, but the point, and I think we've talked about this here before, that there's clearly the comics and the bridge column and the crossword puzzle and the sports section are much less important than the hard news.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who seek those things in a newspaper are very loyal, and at least until the last few years, will continue to buy the newspapers.
I am going to tell Rex's story because he's going to tell it inevitably, and I'd rather tell it than have him tell it.
Which story do you think it is?
This is a story about you had two bridge columns.
Yeah. And, two crossword puzzles.
And you eliminated one of the bridge columns,
two
and you have never
puzzles.
Seen such vehement hating mail.
My thought was, how many crossword puzzles does a newspaper need? And the answer is, however many you have right now.
You can't cut
Don't
one.
Change.
But what happened? I had a backup plan. If there was too much reader response, I was going to find a new place to put the crossword back in. And their first day, there was only about 80 calls. Second day, hundreds of phone calls came in. And so I thought, okay, I'll put the crossword puzzle back where it was. And the place that I put it, I got rid of the bridge column to make room for it.
Okay.
Oh, then the bridge players erupted. So you know what's important. That's what.
Now, I don't know whether this still happens, Rex, or if you're the person who to see if it does, but I'm sure Judy and I got more than our share of visits from the salespeople from the syndicates. Every time they had a new column or a comic strip, it was like the Fuller Brush Man coming to your desk. And they would all say, this is the greatest comic you're going to have. And the answer was, all right, but what am I going to drop? And there was never a good answer.
Did they pay for the lunch?
No, they wouldn't take us. Not a paper my size.
Yeah, we wouldn't go to lunch. But they had it was a tough job. They were always trying to, it was always lower cost. I'd save money, but the potential danger, not worth it. The risk, too high.
Yeah, you know, actually, one of the good sides of the decline of the want ads, you know, our classified advertising is smaller than it used to be, and the result is I can put some extra comics into the classified section instead of on the comics pages, and that's like I just recently added a comic called called.
But that was a strategy too. I mean, we would put comics in the classifieds to attract people to the classifieds because their comic was there.
Yeah.
So you wanted to draw them in if they weren't going, and that was something you could sell to the advertiser.
So anyway, on the way home yesterday, as we speak, I decided to do something I never do. I turn on the local radio station WSBS.
Where's that?
In Great Barrington.
Is that an AM radio?
AM radio station.
Uh-huh.
I think they have an FM now. I'm not sure of that. Anyway, I know that we have to go soon, but almost every story, news story on their news was attributed to the Berkshire Eagle.
Aha!
Which is interesting because I know that newspaper editors have often complained that they just rip and read and they don't attribute. But now somebody must have talked to them because almost every story was attributed to this one newspaper in the area.
And are the call letters the source of ridicule in that community?
What do you mean?
SBS?
On
that was
point,
Ira Fussfeld who said that.
I've never heard the station, so it may be the greatest thing since NPR.
No, I wouldn't say that.
I'd wonder.
Yeah, well, you feel sorry for the people in Indiana who go to Ball State University. So with that, it's the end of things.
Oh, no, already?
This
program ought to be an hour.
Alan Shartok and Ira Fussfeld and Judy Patrick, I'm Rex Smith. We thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Judy Patrick is the Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.